PodNuts wants to thank everyone who supports the network by going to www.podnuts.com/Amazon.
Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 144. This is a show where we talk about all things geeky. If it has a computer in it, at some point we're going to talk about it. My name is Martin Abando. I'm one of the hosts here. But before we get going, I want to take time to just acknowledge our sponsors. So if you go to podnuts.com and you look at the top and on the right-hand side, you're going to see two sponsors. One of them is Repair Tech Solutions. Repair Tech Solutions is a company. They make what's called the ultimate computer repair toolkit. It downloads, installs, maintains, and automates over 300 commonly used repair utilities, and you can add your own. You can find out more about them by clicking on that link up at the top, or go repairtechsolutions.com. The other link that you're going to notice on the right-hand side is one called the Uno Edition, and this is by Instant House Call. Instant House Call is a remote support tool, and they've made a product for one tech. It's called the Uno Edition. It's $29 a month. Go check them out at instanthousecall.com, or like I said, go to podnuts.com and just click on those banners. So I just want to thank my brain just stops every now and then, so I apologize for that. We got a man down again today. So last week Mitch was ill. This week our friend Tim, he is under the weather, but Mitch is back. So hey Mitch, how's it going?
I'm back once again with a sprained wrist, but it's getting better. I'm not going to get into that. We'll just go on to the show.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're here, Mitch. Glad you're here. It's good to see that everybody's back, and at least we're doing well. At least you haven't lost any body parts.
Not yet.
Well, not that I'm assuming that Tim has. Tim's got those stomach bugs. So, man, that's been going around. We actually were at a meeting, and unfortunately, one of the kids from one of the other couples had the stomach bug, and it came on right there during the meeting. So we were getting ready to close things up. Everybody's kind of getting ready to leave, and all of a sudden, oh, Old Faithful kicked in, and we just said, well, that's pretty much the meeting. Let's all go home. So, well, it's second Tuesday of the month, so don't forget to go and get your Windows updates. Speaking of Windows updates, one of the things that I want to quickly bring out here is that for some reason, Windows was going to kill Patch Tuesday advanced notifications. Unless you're a paid provider, which I thought, well, that's not so good.
A paid provider of what?
Yeah. So what does that mean? So they have this. They've got this. Let me put the link here in the show notes really quick, so people can follow along. So what happens is Microsoft has this advanced notification service. It's called the ANS, and what happens is it releases a public blog and to let people know what patches are going to come out. So you could subscribe to it and you could get an email from it. Well, now what's happening is they're only going to allow those patches out or those advanced notifications out to people who purchase this service. But the kicker is that anybody who purchased the services is free to send out those notifications. So if you are currently getting those notifications from Microsoft, just find another provider that will send those out and you can just follow along that way. So while it's not a deal killer, it just kind of is a pain that Microsoft is deciding not to allow the public to get these notifications for free.
Well, or enlighten me a little bit. When you have automatic updating on, does this have anything to do with that?
No. Okay. This has nothing to do with your Windows automatic updates. Okay. This is notifications. So like today, it's the second Tuesday of the month. I'll have to do some research, but we can say these are the vulnerabilities that were released today. It's mm-hmm. that kind of information, not patches. It's just the notifications. So techs know what to look for and what patches are going to be released.
Gotcha.
So, but that's why I wanted to bring that up is because it is the second Tuesday of the month. Don't forget to update your Windows boxes.
Now?
No, not now. Yeah. No. We don't want to mess up the recording.
You're not on a Windows box. So it wouldn't affect you.
Well, but I did. There was a kernel update for my box this morning.
This morning, okay.
But I already updated that. I rebooted it, so we're good there. So over the week, it was a weird week. Last week, it started out kind of busy, and then it kind of flatlined a little bit. Couple little projects I do want to talk about this, and I kind of have a project that has a multiple sections to it, and every little section I want to talk about, but I don't want to step on people's toes though. So Mitch, do you want to talk first or should I?
Yeah, I don't. Well, I've been recommending a lot of laptops lately, or friends of mine are asking me what laptop should I get. They want to get like a second computer or whatever. So I recommended this Toshiba i3, whatever, blah blah blah. But I'm setting it up for them. So this is a buddy of mine, he got one the other day, and he don't even know how to connect to wireless. He has it, but he don't know how to connect to it.
Cause oh, no.
His desktop, he just connects with Ethernet. And so I told him what to do. Just go underneath your router. He's got Fios, and tell me, just write everything down there. He emailed to me. So, all right, so I'm telling him. So I call him up on the phone, John, this is what I want you to do. Well, number one, the wireless was off on his laptop, which amazingly, he figured out how to turn it on. I don't know. I don't have the laptop in front of me, so I was going to look on the manual. So usually some kind of key, kind of a combination, whatever. And he saw it on the keyboard, so he turned it on. So he got it in. He finally got it in. And I wanted to send him, get TeamViewer. So I'll send you a link to that. You have to go to your email, which is Verizon. He does a web-based through Verizon. But he doesn't know how to find that. So I said, John, just Google it. Google it. Anyway, so he proceeded to infect himself doing that. But he finally did get to the right place to check his Verizon email. So, but I thought that was very comical. Just him trying to find Verizon mail, he got infected. Toolbars and stuff. Nothing major, and we got it cleaned up.
Right. But what I'm, even lately for me though, what happens is you Google something and you end up having to know that you have to go through those top kind of sponsored ads first, and a lot of times those sponsored ads have click stuff in them, and that's. I hate that. And I'm a tech, and I've actually clicked on them, and then I'm like, why am I here? And then I realized, oh, I clicked on the top ad for something, and it's one of those things where just...
I use that Web of Trust. I got it on a lot of my PCs. So it helps. But, I mean, of course, he's got a brand new PC, he doesn't know. But he's, what do I need to click on this? I said, it should say Verizon email, something like that. And, of course, then after the fact, I found the exact place to go to, but it was too late. He didn't have this stuff on him. But like I said, we got it cleaned up. And now I have to get his, he wants to be able to get, he's got a HP 6520 or something like that, wireless, but he's got it hooked up wired, and it's wireless. And so I'm reading up, because I've only done a few wireless printers before. But this one says you can use it simultaneously, USB and wireless. And so, because I was thinking, like mine, I have a brother, and it's just a plain laser printer. It's just wired or wireless. I can't do both at the same time. So I assume his is like that, but it's not, according to HP's, the PDF file. So, because I was thinking I was going to get a wireless card for his other machine's desktop. But I don't think we have to now. So we'll play with that next Saturday. I don't want to do that over the phone. I mean, it drives me crazy. I mean, I know you must go through the same thing where you're talking to clients on the phone, just to do the basic things, and sometimes it's difficult.
Yeah. One of the things about those printers that I do know is that even if it says it's wireless, that means that the computer itself, there's a couple things. One, if it says it's wireless, that means that the computer can connect to a wireless access point. So even if your laptop is wired into the network, you can still print to the wireless computer because it's just connecting to your it's connecting to your network via wireless. Okay.
Right.
That's one of them. Then there's what's called direct print. Now, direct print is the machine itself can act as an access point. So it has its own DHCP scope and it will send out all that information so you can print directly to the printer. I've never had very good success with that. And here's why. Is because, well, first off, you have to install an application on your computer because it creates what I can only assume is like a pseudo network card. Because if you're going to get two DHCP scopes, the information needs to know where to go. Because if you're wireless, because you're online, you're on your access point at home, you're doing something, but then you go to print, it has to know it has to print out that one specific port, which then has an IP address that correlates with the printer. And so that causes issues, and that's, I've never liked that. I've always just done, if you're going to have a wireless printer, hook it up to your wireless access point in your home and print through the network.
Yeah, it had that direct link, and then have it the other way, just connect it to your router, which is, I think I'm going to do it that way. Just right, you can do it right off the printer itself.
So, yep.
And then his new laptop should pick it up automatically, and then I'll just install the drivers. Yeah. So
yeah.
I think I don't think I have to do anything with the other printer, period. That's already hooked up working with it via USB.
Right. No. Yeah. I mean, just a couple of days ago, I went to it was actually well, maybe it was early this week, I can't remember. I went to a client and they were having trouble printing via their wireless printer. It just was slow. It wasn't working very well. So all I did is I just plugged it into the network because it could be wired or wireless.
Right, right.
I plugged it into the network and then it worked much faster. They were, you know, they were pleased with the way that it turned out. And it was just because it was wireless. It had to spend time, you know, doing all that stuff. And you know, when you print a job, it depending on how big the job is, it has to spool up. It has to take time to get it set. And the faster the data can get to the printer, then it can, you know, the faster it can print.
The only thing I recommended to them, because it seems like a lot of people do have problems. I've had problems with wireless before, too. But it was hardware issue. It was hardware issues after a while. I said, after we get this set up, leave the printer on. Do not turn it off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I had an older brother, but it too was wireless, and I just got a newer version. But it would not, after a while, the wireless, it would not retain anything. And after a while, the wired, even setting up, doing a static IP, it would not save anything. I mean, unless I kept the computer, I mean, the printer on.
Yeah.
And it just went bad after a while. I mean, I could have still used a USB, but then I went up getting a new one because toner went up in it, and I mean I felt refilled it once, but now it's like there was a new one on sale. It was just as much as a toner, so I got the new, you know, I got a brand new one. So
oh yeah, well I have been delivering and buying and purchasing and selling, well not selling but recommending Brother Printers now for a little over a year,
mm-hmm.
maybe almost 2 years. They're, you know, they used to be kind of like, oh, a Brother printer, and now they've really, their more expensive line, their LaserJet have really stepped up. I've had very little issues with it. I have a Brother printer here in my office, and my Linux box is hooked up USB. It just seems to work better that way. Now everybody else on Windows will print via the network to this printer, and so I have an IP address on my printer itself, mm-hmm. so I can print both ways to it.
Oh, you can. Okay. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. Maybe I can on mine. I don't know. But yeah, it's working fine. Unless it's, and I only print text. I don't need to. If I want to get pictures, right. I'll take it somewhere to get, because it was so expensive. I mean, it was fun printing your own pictures. You had a nice HP printer, but it's just as cheap taking it, you know, to get your photocopies elsewhere. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. It's, you know, you can spend, you know, $100-$150 on a decent black and white LaserJet printer. And it doesn't need to have the scanning and the faxing and copying unless you want it.
Right.
But you can do that. And then really, by the time if you go with a color one and then print it, you got to get the photo paper, and it never turns out right. When my wife's like, well, I just send it via the Costco webpage, sends it to Costco. It's 8 cents if that. It comes out really good. It comes out on photo paper. We can enlarge it.
It's going to be cheaper than if you would have done it yourself.
Exactly. Cases. Exactly.
I mean, I used to do it. You know, I used to get some good results too. But it was it was expensive though, because you would use that color ink really fast.
Well, yeah, no, and I have another company who they print what they're called inserts for their product they sell. They specifically bought a printer that actually has I've never seen this printer. This printer is it's a good size printer. It's not huge, but it's a good size. It weighs, oh my gosh, it's heavy. the thing is inside of it, the printer, it's not paper, it's this drum of photo paper,
mm-hmm.
and it, so it spins out and it prints out on photo paper. And I think the printer was something, it was more than $1,500, but it's specifically designed for photo printing. That's its job. Not cheap photo printing, not your little Epson photo printer,
yeah.
that you buy down at your local store. This is a serious, serious printer. So, I was driving down, must have been Monday, maybe last week, I can't remember. I apologize because of that comes in. And so I'm driving down, and my email goes off, and it's fine. And I look at it, and I ran out of credits. Now, what I've had happen to me in the past is, because I do a little bit of web hosting, I'll have one customer, and I have some IP addresses, but I don't have a lot of them. So I have, and what I mean by that is that my web page may rise out on somebody else's, on a different IP address as somebody else's web page. So when I bought my hosting, I was given 3 or 4 IP addresses. But most of my hosts that I'm hosting are all on the same IP address. They point to the same server, essentially. Okay. The problem with that is that when somebody does something bad, and that I get on a blacklist, it affects everybody. Mm-hmm. So what I ended up doing was going through a company called SendGrid, S-E-N-D-G-R-I-D. And I believe I had mentioned them before on the show. What they do is they are for email and like kind of mass marketing company. But what they do have is they have a free they've got a free product, a free solution that allows you to have what are called basically credits. And I can email 400 emails a day through them. And what I do is I make them then the outgoing SMTP provider. Okay. So I was working along. Everybody's been doing really great with that. And actually, that 400 actually just went up. So they used to be right around 250. Now they're 400. Everything was going really good, no problems. And then all of a sudden, I got an email. You're out of credits, which means that in one day, somebody has sent 400 emails. So I quickly look, and I quickly open up my SendGrid app, and I look at it, and I can see who's sending all of these emails. And I contact this guy, one of my clients, and I said, hey, I think you have a spam bot. We're going to need to take care of that. And he goes, why? Because I've been sending out emails? And I said, yeah, it looks like you've sent out, you know, you've sent out 400 emails today.
Maybe he actually did send 400.
And he did. He says, oh, no, I do that.
Oh, my.
And I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, no, I sent out 400 emails today. It's one of our largest clients, and I send out an email to every client at this job. And he's not computer savvy too much, a little bit, but I had to stop and fix the problem because now he's affected anybody else who sends through there. So it's been resolved, but I need to go back and talk with him and say, hey, you know, through this one company, if you could get distribution groups set up on their side, maybe they have a management distribution group or an HR distribution group, because then you send one email to them and then let them handle splitting it up. Because if they're internally sending 400 emails, nothing's going to happen. Even if those were legitimate emails, which they were, the problem is that looks like spam, no matter how you cut it. And so what happens is you could get flagged by sending that many emails, even if they're legitimate, because it looks like you're spamming somebody, especially to one company. It looks like you're spamming a company.
Gotcha.
So we're going to make some decisions. I've changed my plan so I can have more emails now, but that won't alleviate the fact that there, you know, that could cause issues in the future, excuse me. So I think what I'm going to do is, and I've been kind of tossing this back and forth in my head a little bit, is see about maybe getting him his own personal 400 emails a day. That way, then, if it breaks or he gets blacklisted, it's affecting him, not everybody else. The other thing I've also been doing is that I'm realizing that pop email, just everybody's so mobile these days that pop email is kind of, it's not really worth it. So I've been really working on moving a lot of my clients after they have email issues or just kind of nudging them heavily to maybe moving over to either using Google's hosted mail or Microsoft's hosted mail. I mean, it's not very expensive to do that. And yet, you can save yourself a lot of heartache by going that route. So I still host some email, but I've been trying to nudge everybody over to another hosted service.
Too much of a pain.
You know, that is the one that really, of all the things, the hosted, the email is what can kill me. And that just makes me, that's the biggest thing. When somebody says, oh, my website's down, I can fix that. I get that. But when, you know, when company A sends out way too many emails and blacklists me, then company G calls me because they can't send emails out because company A has got us on a blacklist. I have to drop everything I'm doing because now not only do I have one client down, I may have 5 clients down. I may have 10 clients down. And all of a sudden, everybody now is dependent on that. And
is it a big thing to get yourself or to get off the blacklist?
Depends on the blacklist. A lot of times, and I use MX Toolbox. That's MXTOOLBOX. They can tell you if you're on a blacklist. They check your DNS records, but then there's also a blacklist section there, and they will test your email. So you put in your server IP address or domain name. So I'm there right now, and I can put in obandocomputing.com. That's vom.com, and I'll go and I'll check the blacklist. And what it does is it actually goes through and scans all these, and it looks for 100 known blacklists, and it looks like right now everything is green. One of them timed out. But there's everything from, there's a French blacklist, there's Barracuda, there's Sophos, it's just all these blacklists. Mm-hmm. And usually if you get on one of these lists, you can go and you can check it, and you can figure out how to how to get off it. And usually it's basically, sometimes it's just being honest with them. You send them an email and you say, hey, I apologize. I have a client who was infected, or I have a client who just sent out 400 emails in one day. It wasn't malicious or anything. It just happened. Yeah. And then they'll kind of look at it and they'll do that. And sometimes I've been taken off right away, and other times it's taken me 2 weeks. Yeah. It's those 2 weeks problems that are it's those 2 week ones that are the problem, because when you get blacklisted by somebody big like Barracuda or by Microsoft, you know, I've been blacklisted by Microsoft before, which means that you can't send any email to hotmail.com, live.com, outlook.com, you know what I mean? You can't send emails to them. It won't go through. That's a problem. And my clients get angry. And it's those big ones. I've been blacklisted by a French company before. I emailed them. Within 24 hours, I was off their blacklist. So really, if you do get blacklisted, just be honest with them. And they'll probably take you off. You'll probably get marked. And if it happens again, it's going to be harder. And the next time it happens, you may not get off, and it may be harder. You know what I mean? So every time I think it increases the likelihood of you not getting off their list. But it's everybody at some point will get blacklisted. Just because, you know, if your email gets spoofed, or if somebody's sending email as you, they just look at the domains. So it's troublesome, but it does happen. So with that being said, if you guys are looking for some kind of an email solution where you just need to set up an SMTP server out, SendGrid, SendGrid, works really well. I don't know. Yeah, so if you go to their website and go over to pricing, they've got a thing that says start sending today. Send up to 400 emails a day or 1,200 emails a month, 12,000 emails a month for no credit card needed. And then after that, I think the next pricing plan I have is it's 10 cents per 1,000 email. 10 cents per 1,000. No, it's 10th of a cent. Let me log in. Per 1,000. And then after that, it's like 10 cents or 10 cents per 1,000. Again, it's something along those lines, but it's very reasonable. SendGrid.com. Well, I guess I could talk to you about what that big project is. So I was called last week from a third-party company, and they handle surveillance cameras. Did you want to say something, Mitch?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay. So I was called last week by a company who handles surveillance cameras, and I've worked with this company before because they also do surveillance cameras, but they pull wires. They're a contractor, so they're a network contractor. And what they needed to happen was they needed an external access to cameras on site at three locations. And I said, not a problem. So there was a couple options we can do. One, I don't believe they had a static IP address, so I contacted CenturyLink and asked for, you know, what's the cost for static IP addresses for these three sites? And they said it's somewhere between $5 to $10 a month. I said, okay. The other option is to use something where you have a DNS provider, kind of a rerouter, and something like noip.com. That's no-ip.com. And I already have a noip.com account. I actually have a business account, so I can resell those out. So I called up the company, and I said, well, this is what I can sell you for domain names to resolve these through, and it's going to cost this much per year. And they said, great, let's go with your solution, much cheaper. So not a problem. So I set up these three things, and then I got a hold of the company and that was doing the surveillance system, and they said, okay, we're port forwarding on port 7000. So then I just redirect everything through, go into the router, everything's good. They had it set up one company already, and so I just need to go look and see what they did. Everything was fine because they jumped into the CenturyLink router and made the changes to the port forwarding. So I get everything done except for one of the clients, because one of the clients, the network wasn't set up. It was set up correctly, but we were sharing with a coffee shop, and so I instead of double netting, passing the data through two routers, I wanted to switch things around. So I switched things around the other night, and things just don't work still. And I give them a call, the third party company, and this is kind of my little tip of the day here, is I give them a call, and they have on their network, on their box for the cameras, they have two network cards. One is kind of an external facing, the other one is internal facing that the cameras run off of, and the cameras come into this internal network card. Well, what I didn't know is that out of that internal NIC goes to a switch or a router. Out of that router, I'm going to try to explain this so it's easy to understand. So if you're driving or if you have a piece of paper, here we go. I have, so from the internet comes CenturyLink. Okay. CenturyLink then goes to my network, and then I handle everything from there. There's another CenturyLink line that comes in that then goes to the camera's router, out of the camera router to a switch, out of the switch to all the cameras. Okay. The end of the switch also comes into that second network card for this Windows box that runs the camera software. Okay. Out of the internet NIC into my switch for my internet access. Okay. So that way we can pass the traffic through one way, and then they get their traffic another way for the cameras. So what happened, though, is that they, when they brought in their network with their own DHCP scope and everything like that, they made it a 192.168.0.address range. Well, when the CenturyLink routers come in, and if I don't need to change them, I won't, they are 192.168.0. as well. So when I go and I look at their network, now that I didn't know that they were using that IP address, I assumed when I sat down at those computers that were handling the cameras, the two IP addresses that I was looking at, 192.168.0.10 and 192.168.0.12, were coming from the same router. They're not. 12 belongs to my router, 10 belongs to their router. So when I have to change a network to 172.16, because the 192.168 has already been taken off by another department, I then go into their routers and are into their camera box, and I change both IP addresses to 172.16.0.10 and 172.16.0.12. 12 being mine, 10 being theirs. The cameras stop working. And I don't know, and all I know is that I go and I look at the cameras, and the cameras are still 192.168.0.151 and up. They're statically assigned those IP addresses. So I contact the company. This is late at night, and I contacted them. Actually, it was Sunday night. I contacted them very first thing Monday morning. I said, how can we change the IP addresses on your cameras so they're in the 172.16 range? And the guy, very nice guy, and I've talked to him before. He goes, I don't understand. And I said, well, this is what I did, told him. And he goes, yes, but you shouldn't need to change our camera routers. I'm like, but they're on, they were getting an IP address that I was handing out because it's a 192.168.0 IP address, so you must be getting that from me. And he goes, no, there's two network cards on there, and one goes to our switch. Isn't it the switch right there? And it's not. I didn't see anything. So come to find out, this is where I find out that they have their own switch and their own router that handles out IP address ranges that happen to be the exact same IP address range that I was handling out, but they never touched, so they never caused interference. So does that make sense?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah.
All right, so my tip to the Geekster listeners is this, is that if you are providing a third-party service and you're going to bring in something that's going to create another network for whatever third-party app you're going to use, okay, make it obscure. You know, you don't have to use the 192.168.0 IP address range. You can use 192.168.100. You can use 172.16 something. You can use 10 dot something. Something in the private IP, in the non-routable IP address ranges. Now, you don't have to use the class A, class B, or class C subnets. You can still use a shortened down subnet on a 10 dot IP address range. But by doing it and making it obscure, what you're going to do is then when somebody like me, a tech, comes in there and I look at those and I see two separate IP addresses ranges, it makes sense to me then one IP address range is one way, one IP address range is the other. But when you make them both exactly the same, you know, it's like going out to the parking lot and saying, well, I parked the blue car. Well, which blue car? Well, it's a blue Chevy, you know, Impala, my car. It's a blue Impala, navy blue, Oregon license plates. Here you go. Go move it. And you hand me one key. Well, I go in the parking lot, and the only two cars I see are two navy blue Impalas. You know, it's confusing. Make it just a little bit different. That way you know, and then let somebody know. Part of this process that happened was that there was definitely a lack of communication, not just when they installed the cameras, because those cameras had been there for a while, but the manager or one of the owners of the company said, I would need remote access to the cameras. And then I got a call from the third party company saying, we need to create remote access. And we went in and we already modified these routers at this location, and we already did this at that location. And I quickly got a hold of the manager of the sites, and I said, hey, how come I wasn't, you know, notified? Well, we didn't know until they showed up. And then you know, something else happened, and I had to call back, and it was like, well, you know, I said, you know, so the problem I run into is that if somebody comes out and they're messing with the network and then it breaks, then I have to get called out to fix it. as opposed to if you tell me ahead of time, I can give you IP addresses and I can give you information that's going to make the transition so much smoother. And then I would have known, oh, you guys are bringing in your own router. Well, let's make it this, and so that way I know my notes make sense. Now I know. But this is something I'm going to have to pass on to the next tech because I'm not going to be around forever. Maybe these buildings are going to be around probably a lot longer than I'm going to be around. But I have to know this, and I have to pass this on to the next person who takes over. And if they just had that, and so when you're deploying things like this, have some forethought about things like that. I had a client call me this week, and he says, I just want to let you know we've been in contact with Pacific Office Automation. They're a distributor, and they resell out like giant copiers and stuff like that. He said, they're bringing in a demo copier for us to use today. What kind of information can I give them? And I said, great. Give them this IP address. Give them this information. And then I know, now I wrote down in my notes, this is the IP address. And this, they didn't just come in, plug it in, put on the DHCP scope. Now all of a sudden the scope gets lost or something happens and it can't get connected. And now there's printing issues. I gave them an IP address range that was set up for specifically for the printers. And it already is going to work and talk. So just that little bit of forethought is going to save people a lot of heartache. So yesterday I had to drop everything I did doing, drive 40 minutes down there to meet the gentleman who with the third party company. And he goes, oh, here's the problem. And he showed me and explained to me what how their network set up. I'm like, oh, that makes total sense. So I dropped everything. I was down there for 15 minutes. It was a 40-minute drive there, a 40-minute drive home for me to go down for him to explain something to me for 15 minutes because I didn't have this information. And it didn't, and it would have made sense if his IP address ranges were different than the ones that were currently on site.
I got it. I'm just glad I don't do what you do for a living.
Well, it makes sense now. Yeah, and I understand why they're doing it, how they're doing it, and I won't make that mistake again. But if I'm looking at two IP addresses and they're on two different net cards with the same with different IP addresses, but in the same range, it only makes sense to me that they're coming from the same location because the wires are all going in the same direction. They go out of pipe. I'm like, didn't realize that because they're the company who actually physically pulled the wires, they have a wire going in two different locations. Well, I didn't know that. So my little tip.
Rant.
You know. But what it does is it makes me think, oh, okay, I need to do this a little bit differently when I'm deploying something at a site. Or that's something that's, you know, maybe it may not be cameras. Maybe it's a voice over IP system that has their own separate network connection. Maybe it's, you know, a backup solution that needs its own IP address range. You know, it could be, there's so many different things that may need a separate IP address. Just don't make them the same as the one that's currently on site. They're not going to touch, so it's not going to cause any issues, but it's confusing when you look at it on paper. Ah, there. my little...
There's too many pieces of a pie, or just have one person do everything. Like, if you would have done everything from scratch, none of this would happen. You know,
right?
Managed everything. I mean, you know, everything from the get-go.
Yeah, yeah. So I had a... And this just came in this morning, actually, and I've been emailing him back and forth, and he just sent me another email. So my wife, we finally had a chance to sit down with my – I'm going to get to the thing, but I'm going to give you some backstory. So we just had a chance to sit down with my wife and work on her phone. For the longest time, she didn't have all the apps that she wanted or needed, and it's just – we've been busy. So my wife, as you know, moved from an iPhone to an Android. So she's – how do I get music on there? How do I set this up? What do I do about, you know, this or what do I do about that? Right now, it's basically been her Words with Friends and Scrabble phone. She makes phone calls, but that's it. Nothing else. So we sat down the other day, and I got her, you know, her weather app that she wanted. We sat down and did, you know, the school apps so she could log in and look at the kids' schools and grades and what's missing for assignments and, you know, just all of these apps that are functional. We moved over to the Google Launcher because she liked the fact that I have the Google cards. Even though both of our phones are Samsungs, you can load the Google Now Launcher. So it's instead of using Samsung's TouchWiz launcher, their interface, you can use Google's interface. So it looks like a Google Nexus phone, even though it's not.
And you don't have to be rooted.
You don't have to be rooted. Yeah, right. Just go look for Google Now Launcher in the Play Store and then run that and install that. And it now then changes. Now, it gets rid of all your current folders, so you have to make new folders and stuff like that. But you can slide over to the left and get the cards like you do in a Google phone, like my Nexus 7. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, one of the things that I really enjoy and I've talked many times about on this program is LastPass. It's my password manager for passwords. You can put notes in there. I have credit card information in there. I've got like my, some our kids' medical information in there, like their medical number, stuff like that. So that way I don't have to worry about trying to find it or carry cards on my wallet. I can just pull it up right then there. It's completely encrypted. It's safe. It's ready to go. You can share LastPass stuff, information. So my wife already had a LastPass, and I keep telling her, you know, when she's on her computer, I said, well, LastPass. She's like, I don't know how to use it. It doesn't make sense. So I had this chance to sit down with her and talk to her about it. But it also meant that I had the chance to take my LastPass information I had for, like, the bank, my banking information, like kids' information, and just I could share them with her. She had her own LastPass account, and I can share them. Now, I need to go through this a little bit more to figure out if I change it, hers should change. But you get a new symbol. Like, it looks like a family symbol. It's two people on in LastPass. So I know that that information is being shared out. But like I said, I need to test it. I need to create one and then put data in there, share it, see what it comes up on her phone. Great. Modify the data and see if the data gets modified on her phone. Because what that means is that I can change the banking password, save it in my LastPass, and then hers gets updated. And then all she has to do is just log in. And hers, like my Samsung, has the second authentication by via you swiping your finger. So things can work out really well. Today, this morning, I got an email from a client, and he is the owner of a company, and he also, he's not the most computer savvy. He's good, but he's not, you know, he's not great. And his email says, hi, Martin, I want to discuss this program, but I need your help. Thanks, call to discuss. And the title was for a program called Dashlane, Dashlane. I have never heard of it. I thought maybe it was something to do with the industry that he works in. And I go to Google, and of course, Dashlane. And what it is it's a password manager, free form filer, save all your documents. It's basically LastPass, but it's not. It's not LastPass. So, and LastPass will do fill-in forms and all that kind of stuff. So that's really nice. So I said, I have never heard of it. I can look at it some more. I said, but can I recommend LastPass to you? I said, I have used it. It's very secure. I have colleagues use it. I know tech people in upper, higher up in the industry who use LastPass. I said, and I told him, I said, it's cross-platform, Windows, iPhone, Android, Mac. It integrates in all browsers, Safari, Chrome, IE, Fox. And I emailed him that. And he says, I emailed him that at 9:11 this morning. And at 1:23, so 4 hours later, he emails me back and says, yes, LastPass is great. And I deleted Dashlane. So I emailed him back. I said, well, let's set up a time then. I can come show you how to use LastPass. And he said, nope, I have it all set up. It was really easy. YouTube video tutorials were very helpful. So this guy who has a hard time getting his phone and everything set up and working correctly was able to install, configure, and start using LastPass on his own via some YouTube tutorials. LastPass is free. For the little bit of extra cross-platform features, it's $12 a year. That's $1 a month. I don't know. I wish they were a sponsor because I could just talk about them more. I mean, I'll just talk about them. But if you have not used LastPass and you're using some kind of password that you write down, put on your keyboard. I hope not. I really hope not.
It's now, right here, below my monitor, right there.
Yeah.
See, right there? It's right there. Yeah.
Sweet. Now everybody knows Mitch's passwords because he just pointed them. You know, the one thing I have heard from people is that LastPass, they hold on to your password, whereas something like KeePass or I can't think there's another one that you use where you have your password vault. You hold on to it, and maybe you want to put it in Dropbox, or maybe you're going to put it in your BitTorrent sync folder, and then it comes down to you having everything, whereas LastPass, at least they're holding on to your stuff, and you have to do that. That's really up to you. This gentleman was not looking for that. He was looking for something web-based. All I know is that LastPass works well. It's very encrypted. They don't have your passwords. That's the problem. LastPass doesn't have your password, so if you lose your password, I don't think they can help you because they don't really know your password. I think they just know hashes and stuff of other things that they mesh together and make sure that it matches. And I believe Security Now with Steve Gibson and Leo Laporte I know they did a talk about LastPass, and it's been a while since he's talked about it. It's been a couple of years, but I believe it's episode 142. Let me look. It was something along those lines. 142 transcript. No, that's not it. Well, anyways, Google now, just security now, look up LastPass, and it's in there. Steve Gibson runs through this whole thing, and he talks about it.
Didn't I thought it was you for a minute, or you, or maybe Jeff. Didn't we interview somebody from them at one time?
They have, yeah. I interviewed LastPass on PodNuts Daily for before Jeff came on board, and then I believe Android App Addicts had a LastPass person on.
Okay.
256 is the LastPass. So Security Now episode 256, and I'll put a link in the show notes for that as well. For LastPass, and that was done July 10th of 2010. So it's been a while. But here's the thing: that you know, if you have good security, then there's no reason to change it. It was one of the things that I know that's why people were mentioning a lot with TrueCrypt, is they were frustrated that TrueCrypt wasn't changing. Or at least I had heard that before they decided to cease the implementing or cease improving on it. Is that TrueCrypt wasn't changing. But a lot of people I heard said, if it's not broken, why fix it, though? If the security is good and it's standing up to today's standard, then why tweak with it? And so that makes me think of that, the reason about LastPass is that this was that's done 2 years ago, three years ago, July 10, 2010, but not, I don't know, LastPass has probably done some changes to their security, but really, if it's good then should be good now. And I haven't heard anything bad about them. And I still use them, have for many years. Let's see what else. I'm trying to think of what other stuff I did. This was kind of it was a good week, but it felt like, it was kind of hit and miss. It would be quiet some days, and the other days would be crazy. But craziness wasn't always, wasn't always Geekster material. It was, could you set up a password, or could you, add an email account, or, it was changes at one of my locations where I had to just kind of go through and make password changes. And I'm going to be deploying a Windows 8 box tomorrow. Windows 8.1 for a client. He bought a new printer. He's got an old machine, old Windows XP machine. So that came in, deploying a new printer and Windows XP or Windows 7 box today. Oh, speaking of Windows XP, I raised my hand arm earlier, and if you caught it on the video, you notice I'm wearing a red band around my arm, and it's because I gave blood today. And so I'm there laying down, and I usually go downtown Portland to the big center that they have everything at, the American Red Cross Giant Center. But this was a mobile bus because it was close and I didn't have to drive 40 minutes downtown. And I'm laying there and I look just really quick to my side, and right hanging there on the wall is a Motorola access point. So I turn my head a little bit more to follow the cables, and it goes into this little Netgear switch. I'm like, okay. And I open up my phone, and sure enough, I can see their access point. And I'm like, okay, I'm trying to guess what their encryption, trying to guess what their password is. And I could do it. And I thought, I don't want to do this too long. But, I quickly, blood donation, nope. Red Cross, nope. I put in the name of the access point, nope. Put in all lower, all uppercase. I'm thinking, because I think we've all gone to sites where we see something locked down. And so what we do is we try the name of it, and you're like, oh, it's the name of the location. But one of the things I did notice, and I didn't notice earlier, was I look on the wall and they've got a computer there that there are people are logging into. They're doing some stuff. It's a Windows XP box. Now I don't know if it was Windows XP. It may have just been Windows 7 with the XP theme on it. But it's a brand new HP Core i3 laptop running Windows XP, possibly.
That's my computer's an XP at work. At work.
Well, you're also not putting in my medical information and blood donor stuff.
No.
So, I didn't get a chance to ask him. I thought, do I ask him? Do I not?
I don't know. You never did get into the router or anything?
No. So there, I mean, that's...
They changed it, huh?
I don't... Well, I didn't... I wasn't trying very hard, and really, that's not... I don't think that's necessarily legal.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you just want to see if they're doing the right thing.
Well, yeah, it'd be kind of, it's... Remember the tire location of the auto shop that I was into, where they had their stuff wide open. I'm like, mm-hmm. Would you tell them it's wide open because you're being the good guy, or do you not tell them because by being the good guy shows that, there could be malicious intent?
Yeah.
And, we always hear about stories of people saying, well, I brought this to your attention because I wanted you to know how bad your product is or how there's a gaping hole in it. And they're like, oh, now you're arrested for, mm-hmm. Breaking into something. I was like, well, I wasn't going to use it for harm. I was just, so... I didn't say anything I didn't get into their network either, but I didn't say anything about the tire place. I just let
actually
them...
More importantly, you didn't pass out from giving blood. That's the great thing.
No. Well, no, it's, I do double red.
What does that mean? Red.
I'm O negative. So I'm universal donor. Mm-hmm. So instead of just giving whole blood, which includes, platelets and plasma and blood, or red blood cells. What they do is they take all my, they take whole blood out, they spin it, they separate platelets from whole, from blood, red blood cells, and they just keep the red blood cells and they put the fluid back in me. And then they do, so they do that twice. And so I will give what's equivalent to a whole blood, the size of that same amount of size of whole blood, but I'll just give just red blood cells. Then they can take my blood, mix it with somebody else who donates platelets, and basically double the donation, essentially, because they can spread it out over and use more of it. Wow. It also means that I can't give as often, and it's not just to sit down. I have to go to, I've got to be hooked up to a certain machine.
Yeah, I can't give blood. I used to, but I got, just because of infections that I had throughout the years, I can't give it anymore.
Yeah, well, this is the first time I've given blood after a new tattoo. And, you know, because one of the questions is, did you get a tattoo? Yeah. And I said yes, and they said, okay, was it, you know, first off, was it in a licensed facility? Yes. Was it state-run, you know, state-licensed facility, sterile needles, sterile everything? And I said, yes, yes, yes. You know, I watched the guy. It wasn't out of the back, you know, this wasn't a out of the back of the van on the side of the street kind of tattoo. It was in the facility, and they're like, okay, great, that's fine. That's Oregon law. Now, your law may be different. That's, I think, right. California is, they're like, tattoo? Nope, done. You can't give blood for, you know, a year or something like that.
I think, what, hepatitis they worry about and stuff like that, yeah.
Well, and I mean, I gave blood when I was still working within the medical field. And I had a guy, I never got poked, but I transported a couple of people with hepatitis, you know, in exposure, yes. Well, what kind of exposure? I said, I was working in the medical field, you know, all universal precautions, my gloves and everything was all safe. But, you know, I'm not going to go in there and lie to them. I mean, if they say, well, no, we probably can't have you give blood because it may cause something down the road, that's fine. Right. I'll come back another time. I do that about, I think I have to wait every 12 weeks or something like that now.
Right.
So I can't do it right away. Now I could go in and do platelets, so, which is just the liquidy stuff, because your body makes those all the time. So
liquidy stuff. Okay.
But that's a whole lot of arm poking. That's, you know, because you can go in and get platelets like every other week or something like that.
Don't tell me about arm poking. I was hospitalized for 8 days.
That's right.
10 years ago. So I know about arm poking.
Oh, man. Are you sleeping? I need to, you know, poke you with this IV. You know, I was sleeping, and now
when I had gallbladder surgery, I got blood clots, so I was in a hospital for 8 days.
Oh.
Anyway, so they're constantly checking my blood, and that's not counting the what do you call it, the main thing I had,
the IV
in there, and most of the nurses did fine, and there's one nurse, and they're waking me up like every 3 or 4 hours. I mean, I didn't sleep the whole 8 days anyway. And right. She could not get it in there. I said, if you can't do it, please don't do it at all.
Said, I know. Can you call somebody else who's a little more skilled?
Right,
because
exactly.
That just hurts. And you're making me annoying.
Yeah. It hurt.
It does. So that's what I got. I mean, there's not, unfortunately, I don't have anything that's huge.
Yeah, I didn't do it. Like I said, all I've been doing is just helping people set up their new PCs. This i3 Toshiba laptop I'm recommending. It's with a Windows 7, and they're brand new. I said, get it because they're going to be hard to find. So Staples was selling them. They actually it's still on sale this week if they still have them. And it's a nice one. It's got like a 750 gig hard drive, 6 gigs of RAM, and it's like $350 with a rebate. That's a decent price.
And yeah. I'm unfortunately not a huge Toshiba fan, and that's just me. That's just me.
See, I got one over here. That's actually, I'm doing the recording on the Toshiba i3 laptop. It's about, I'd say maybe 5 years old.
Yeah.
The only bad thing it didn't come with HDMI. But I haven't had any problems with it, really.
And I think, you know, I think every tech has a time where they've gotten burned, whether it's, you know, I had a boss who was just adamant regarding Norton. He hated it. Now, this was when Norton Security, Norton, their corporate was good. Mm-hmm. It worked really good. He had gotten burned early on and just hated Norton. I mean, anytime he mentioned it, he just was very frustrated with it. And I think every tech has been that way regarding something. I've been burned a couple times by Toshiba. I know other people who have been burned by like Western Digital hard drives. They will only buy Seagate or something, Maxtor, whatever. They won't buy Western Digital because they've had problems with them in the past. And I think we're all kind of in that boat. And so when I say I'm not too impressed with Toshiba, they could be the best thing. And it's just past experiences, you know. I've used Dell products and been with Dell products for years. I know how they work. I know how they operate. I know other people who don't like Dells at all.
HP. I mean, a lot of guys. I don't think you get into taking laptops apart too much.
Lately, I have.
Well, a lot of guys they hate the HPs.
Yeah.
I just don't know if they're as bad as what they were. You know, they had the video card problems, stuff like that. And people, I not just tell them, like, you know, honestly, I don't think one's different from the other. They're all using the same parts.
Yeah.
You know? And but a lot of the guys hate HPs. And I've only taken a few apart and done stuff with. And they actually they were HPs, but it wasn't video card problems. It was always adapter problems. You know. Replacing adapters, putting soldering a new adapter in there. But like I said, I got a Toshiba and I bought two cheap Acers, and they work fine too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're the bottom of the line Acers, I think. And my wife's new one I got her it's a quad core, it's 99.3, but she loves it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, today I went next. I went to a client and she says her computer is running slow. And when she bought the computer, I vaguely remember telling her that she probably wants more than 2 gigs of RAM, but she bought it with 2. That's fine. So I go over there today and I know. So she has 2 gigs of RAM.
It's not fine. What was it? Yeah. I would never tell anybody to buy it. Don't ever buy anything with 2 gigs of RAM.
I know. So she bought it with 2 gigs. Okay. And it's been running fine. Now it's slow. Well, the cheap thing to do would be to add more RAM to it. So I get a hold of the laptop, and I just came from there before the recording. And, you know, she's working on it, so I'm going to do it tonight and, part some stuff out and look at it. So I grab the laptop. I flip it over, one solid piece except for the battery.
They're going to that now. Everything, you got to take the whole thing apart.
Right. To put the RAM. Depends on the model.
Right.
I know that in Dells, if you buy, so when people say, what do you recommend for a Dell laptop? And I will say, this is what I recommend. And I go to the work part in Dell and I get them Dell, like Inspiron or higher laptops, because they have panels on them. Like my laptop, it has a panel on the back that you can get to the stuff. All of the cheaper end laptops that I'm seeing, especially from Dell, are all that unibody one. And it's like, now I have to field strip your laptop to try to add more RAM to it. Mm-hmm. So
I think my voice Acer's like that. I think these new Toshibas are like that too.
So I took a picture of what it is so I can come home and find out, well, first off, how much RAM it can take. And I'm pretty sure it can take 2, but I want to know, I'm pretty sure it can take up to 4. I want to know if it can take 8 or 16. And the reason is because the jump between 8 and 16 is pretty big. There's a pretty good price range difference there, but there may not be, and I may be able to convince her to go with 8. Because really, when's the last time as a tech you've ever heard, I have too much RAM? you don't. No, you don't hear that. Because
here's the bad thing. She'll have, you said she's got 2. She probably has 2 1 gig sticks, which you can't.
Oh, yeah, which means we'll have to buy pairs.
You have to replace them, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I know she doesn't have 1, 2. I know she's got 2 1s.
Yeah, which is stupid. You know, I mean, they're trying to save money.
Right, right. But you know, if for instance, if a 40, 4 gigs of RAM is, say, $40, but 8 gigs of RAM is maybe $50, I'm going to really push her and say, you know what, go with more RAM. More RAM's always going to be better. And if anybody texts, you know that. I don't have to explain that to you guys and gals. But so I'm hoping that maybe the difference between 4 and 8 is going to be small because, I mean, what's one of the first things? I bought my laptop with 2 gigs of RAM in it on purpose because I knew that it took up to 16 and I could get 16 cheaper than when I bought it through Lenovo.
Right.
So I bought my laptop, bought my RAM. My RAM came in and sat until my laptop came in. Pulled out the hard drive, put an SSD in, pulled out the back, put more RAM in it, and then booted Linux to
those
it.
What you just said, that's probably the 2 most improvements that you'll see. I mean, really significant operating improvement. You know, replacing a RAM and putting an SSD in there, you really see a big difference.
In the box that it's in the box, I think it's in my closet here, in the box for my laptop, the original 350 gig spinning hard drive is still in there with Windows on it. Like, I didn't even turn on the machine. I took out the hard drive and put another hard drive in.
Right.
When I bought it. So, yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I've got a SanDisk 128 gig here. So, this is my first one of the ones I bought.
That's what I have in here. It's not a SanDisk. It's an OCZ, and it's only 120 gig hard drive in here. But I got a terabyte external drive secondary.
Oh, so you've got the SSD is your primary, and then your data is So I ran out of this one here, and it's one of the thin ones. Mm-hmm. It's got to be the kind of the low profile ones. So there's this one, and this was 128, and I was running out of room. So then I bought this crucial one, 256 gig. I bought this one. And then my laptop crashed, and I thought, all my data is on this one. should I just buy another hard drive or whatever? So I ended up buying this one, and I haven't even opened it yet. It's still in the box.
They're top of the line, some of those Samsung ones.
The Samsung 840 Evo, and I read a lot about it. This is 250. I read a lot, but I mean, the package hasn't even opened up. The sticker's still on it. And I thought, you know, I'm going to hold on to it. So I copied all my data to another drive, to external drive, put this, my Crucial One back in there and reloaded it. And that's what I'm currently running on.
But
on
you're going to be using Linux, correct?
Pardon me?
You're going to be using Linux, right?
Oh, I have been using Linux for a long time. Okay.
So you don't clone, you just do a clean install?
I just do a clean install.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and ouch. The one thing with Linux is that you can just, you know, I have my home directory. My Thunderbird is right there. My Firefox is right there. So when after I reinstall it, I open up Firefox, I close it, I take everything, I copy it over.
I got my main laptop that I use most of the time upstairs. It's an old MSI Core 2 Duo, and I'm probably on my third or fourth hard drive, and I just do a clean install. Nothing's wrong with the other ones. I just get a different hard drive, or I inherit hard drives, and then. I'll just put, actually, I got Windows 8 on it. It came with Windows 7, 32-bit. But it had 4 gigs of RAM. Why they put 32-bit on, I don't know. But I got a Windows 8 on there, and it runs better. I have a brand new hard drive, and I put Windows 8.1 on there. It runs better than it did with Windows 7.
Yeah.
I mean, it will get bogged down if I'm doing something like a Hangout. Yeah, with like a Google Hangout, kind of. But other than that, it still runs well.
Yeah, I 8.1. This is what, like I said, over here. I use start X. Yeah, mm-hmm. Start 8 mm-hmm. by Stardock.
So and, you still use it even on 8.1?
Pardon me?
You still use that even on Windows 8.1?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not a big deal to me just to find the apps. I mean,
right.
That the Windows key and the S. If you just want to search for something, you know, it's just so convenient.
Well, the two computers that I've deployed with that have been
See, I'm afraid if I put something like on there and you get updates, something might break down the road. I don't know.
You're right. It could. And, you know, but here's the thing. One was my mother-in-law. She was going from Windows 7 to Windows 8 or adding on. And this gentleman, this is client, is going from Windows XP to Windows 8.
Right.
And I called him on this because I didn't call. You know, what happened was he's looking at longevity because he's had this Windows XP machine for a long time. So I went and I did some research. And Windows 7, it goes end of life, kind of like Windows XP in 2020. Windows 8.1 is in 2023, so there's not a huge difference. So when I called him and said, you know, this is the two, these are the, you know, you have 3 years difference. You know, 2020 is still 5 years away from now. You know, 2023, of course, is 8 years. I said, if you're going to have this computer, if you feel like you're going to have this computer for more than 8 years or are not even interested in upgrading at all, then let's go with Windows 8.1. We'll throw Start 8 on there. We'll make it run. We'll make it feasible. You can do this. I said, if you feel like you're going to be replacing your computer, especially after 5 years, you know, then let's just throw Windows 7 on there. We'll go baby steps and we'll get you into something like that. And he said, no, I'd like to hold it longer. It's okay. We'll go 8.1. You know, I have found that when it, you know, that I'm more, I guess part of it was when Windows 8 and 8.1 came out is that I didn't have enough experience to do it, to mm-hmm. use it. Mm-hmm. So it was hard, and it was still buggy. But I can't blame Microsoft 100% for it, for my hesitance in buying their product because I couldn't support it. And right. if I have clients buying a product, you know, I had very little, and a lot of my clients, especially in enterprise, they don't even want 8. They're not even using 8. They say Windows 7. But now that I've had enough taste of Windows 8, and I can get around it a little bit better, and I know what to do, and I know where to click, and I know the little keyboard shortcuts. All for consumers, for home users, if they want to go with 8, they can. Sometimes some of them say, I don't want 8. I want Windows 7.
See, with Windows 8.1, you can set it up if it's not by default. It will just boot to the desktop. And now I just turned off without using any third party. You can just turn off the charms bar. You don't turn it off, but instead of just going over to the right, it only will come on if I go to the bottom right. You know, you can just take some tabs out and, you know, right click on whatnot. And you don't have to do any third party software. And, but, you know, I'm telling my wife all this and, you know, I never touch mine. So I don't do anything in there. Man, she's doing stuff in the modern apps for Windows 8. I see she set up her weather thing, you know, said, well, it's fine if you want to do that. So sure. She just messed around with it on herself.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. Just seems like it's two different operating systems in one. I just don't get the point, you know.
Yeah, I think I'll be. I've used Windows 10. I know that you've used Windows 10, the beta version of Windows 10.
I had to take it off.
I'll be.
It was too buggy for me.
Right. It definitely when Windows 7 first came out and they released it out for people to test it and try it, it was pretty stable. It actually worked really well, and they only improved it, and then the final release came out, and it was like, okay, this is a good product.
Which one was this?
Seven.
Right, okay.
And then 10 came out. We all know that 10 came out in beta, and you could test it and play with it. It was still a little buggy.
It might be better now, but I just had to take it off.
I think I used it for maybe an hour. Really,
I use it more than that, but I wound up putting 8.1 on it, and that's fine. It works fine on there. And it's older Core 2 quad, which is older hardware, but it's working much better with that. So
yeah, well, mine 10 was just on this little test box behind me. Actually, I may have even put on a different one.
What is
this? One of those things where after I installed it, I was like, well, what do I do with it now? Like,
yeah, look at it, stare at it.
You
need to play around with it, because you're going to have clients that will be using it, so you need to play around with it.
Right. And I mean, but it looks just like, I mean, it really looks just like Windows 8, except they've modified the start menu a little better. So it wasn't a huge thing for me to go, oh, okay.
And I think I was telling you, like, my wife's laptop came with Windows 8.1, and they put a third party's or their own utility to the regular start menu, which is pretty convenient. So, like StarDock or whatever you're using.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Start 8. Yeah, because there's Classic Shell, which is free, mm-hmm. And it's okay, and I've used both Classic Shell and Start 8. Start 8's much nicer. And it's fine. I mean, it's $4.99.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Really it's cheap. Not. If it was the difference between free and $25, I could see that. The difference between free and $5, go with the $5 one. It's so much nicer than the other one. So that's it. That's all I got, Mitch.
That's all I got. It was fun. I always like listening to you because it's very educational. Like, I didn't make last week's show, but I did. I listened to it later on in bed and went to sleep. And you were talking about the procedure for starting
the Pixie
server. That was very interesting.
And actually, Liam Tidwell emailed me back and said, hey, I listened to your episode, and he had used a Fog server before, which is a cloning image server before for the Pixie Boot. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and open up Pixie Boot server again and give it another shot. So
he boxed me too about I made a reference to Ed Norton from the Jackie Gleason Show. I'm surprised you don't remember. And he knew what I was talking about. He said, hey, I got the joke or whatever reference you're making about. Because you don't remember Jackie Gleason?
I do, but I don't remember.
Ed Norton, the guy, the character was on the show, The Honeymooners, but it's all
right. Right.
But he got it. And I thought he was younger than you. Maybe he's not. He is younger than you.
Yeah, he's younger than me.
Yeah. Watches a lot of TV, I guess.
Maybe. Well, Mitch, if people want to get a hold of us, send us a voicemail or email. What's the best way they can do that?
If you want to get a hold of us, or if you want to get a hold of, any one of us, or for me, you can't get a hold of me, but you can you can email us at geeksters@podnuts.com. Am I right on that? Hold on.
Yes.
And you can send us a voicemail at 707-6-PODNUT. Am I right?
Yes.
707-676-3688. If you want to do just the numbers. I hate doing the letters because I can't.
I know. I'm always messing up with that. If you guys want to contact me, you can contact me at the same place, or you can contact me directly. I'm martin@obandocomputing.com. You can follow me. I'm mobando on Google+. When I'm online on the PodNuts forums, I try to be there more than not. I am Obando Computing. Guys, thanks for coming out and hanging out with us. Have a great fiscal week, and don't forget to be gruntled. All right, guys, we're going to talk to you later. Bye-bye.